October 2020, Los Angeles, mid-afternoon. A woman sits on her couch watching Netflix and simultaneously scrolling Facebook. An advertisement in her feed starts autoplaying, paid for by the ride-sharing service Lyft.
But if drivers are forced to become employees, up to 90% of app-based driving jobs could disappear, and the jobs that are left wouldn't have the flexibility they need. There would be set shifts, flat wages, and limits on when and where they could drive.
The ad's pushing for a yes vote on a California ballot initiative known as Prop 22. The ad claims drivers want flexibility. That makes sense, the woman thinks. She closes Facebook and looks back at the TV. She's just in time for the latest episode of Real Housewives. But another ad is playing.
Unemployment has skyrocketed. What do state politicians do? Pass a drastic law that could eliminate hundreds of thousands of jobs.
She frowns. She's been laid off because of the COVID-19 pandemic, and so have lots of her friends. She'd been getting by on stimulus checks, but those just dried up. Now she's eating into her savings and taking on credit card debt while she job hunts.
Threatening to shut down rideshare and food delivery services.
The mention of food delivery reminds her that she's hungry, so she opens up Uber Eats. She's been ordering way more takeout while stuck in quarantine, and so have lots of other people. The food delivery business is exploding during the pandemic. Inside the app, there's a pop-up she has to click through before she can see the list of restaurants. She pauses to read it.
Keep drivers earning. Most drivers will lose work if Prop 22 fails. Get the facts. Yes, on 22.
These ads are all part of a campaign blitzing California, paid for by DoorDash, Uber, and Lyft. The three tech giants have teamed up to campaign for a yes vote on Prop 22. The companies claim Prop 22 will improve drivers' financial situations and working conditions. But Prop 22 would also deny them the right to be classified as employees in California, which means delivery and ride-sharing apps would have to pay for benefits, paid time off, and other costs. It's vital to their bottom line that drivers remain classified as contractors. So vital, they're spending $200 million on their campaign, the highest outlay on any ballot measure in California history. The pandemic bump combined with a yes vote on Prop 22 could be the secret sauce that finally propels these food delivery companies to sustain profitability. If not, it could prove that the apps are nothing more than empty calorie businesses, startups that look and taste good, but with a balance sheet that's turned sour.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you-know-business.
Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts. From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. In our last episode, Uber Eats expanded to a standalone app and grew its customer base through a partnership with McDonald's. Postmates cornered the high-end market. Grubhub finally started delivering food with its own drivers, which helped them gain ground. And DoorDash became the second biggest source of food delivery sales behind Grubhub. Now, the food delivery wars are reaching their final battle. And we're picking up about 9 months before the start of the pandemic. Faced with so much competition in the marketplace and labor advocates breathing down their necks, the big players need to consolidate or risk going under. This is episode 4, Just Desserts. July 2019, San Francisco. Tony Hsu sits at his desk in DoorDash HQ, his eyes straining from fatigue. While competitors are fighting over turf in the cities, DoorDash is on a massive campaign to expand into the suburbs. It's made it into 4,000 urban and suburban markets and has close to 350,000 restaurants on its app. The company's become ubiquitous, the everyman's food delivery service. But not everyone is happy with it. It's the head of media relations.
Tony, you need to read this New York Times article. I just sent it to you on Slack.
Hsu feels his stomach sink. This can't be good. He opens the story and begins reading while the media relations head waits on the line.
This title is making me nervous already. My frantic life as a cab-dodging, tip-chasing food app delivery man. Huh. Okay, hold on. I'm reading here.
He scans the article. A reporter posed as a delivery man for Postmates, Uber Eats, and DoorDash. Hsu skips ahead to the DoorDash section.
DoorDash offers a guaranteed minimum for each job. For my first order, the guarantee was $6.85, and the customer, a woman in Barham Hill who answered the door in a colorful bathrobe, tipped $3 via the app, but I still received only $6.85.
Hsu rereads the paragraph. It's an accurate summary of a policy the company has kept on the down low. DoorDash doesn't give tips to its drivers. Instead, it guarantees a certain payment per delivery. If the customer doesn't tip, the Dasher still gets that guaranteed minimum. But if the customer does tip, DoorDash pockets that money and puts it toward offsetting the cost of the minimum guarantee to make up for all the other people who don't tip. The media relations head is getting impatient.
Have you read it? We're getting a lot of heat on Twitter about this. People are pissed we're using the customer's tip to offset our costs. And scroll down to the comment section on the article. It's brutal.
Hsu leans back in his chair. The article is particularly bad timing for DoorDash because their public profile has just risen by a lot. 2 months ago, DoorDash raised $600 million in funding. That valued the company at $12.6 billion. For Hsu's business to be skimming $3 tips from drivers? Well, it's not a good look.
What should we do?
I think we need to make a change.
But people have criticized our tip model before. Why change it now?
Because this story has legs. It's going everywhere. We don't want to be seen as the evil company taking money from drivers. We're all about helping small businesses.
Hsu knows she's right. But DoorDash still isn't profitable, and its new investors are pushing it to focus on making money. Plus, restaurants like Applebee's have been negotiating for lower fees, which is squeezing DoorDash's margins. Changing the tipping model could impact its road to profitability and send DoorDash's hopes down the drain. It's a problem that the other delivery giants are facing as well. There's pressure from restaurants to offer customers the lowest fees. Hsu decides he can't risk losing customers, not with so many competitors in the market. He needs to reposition the company as helping its workers, not hurting them. So he takes to Twitter.
We're changing our model. The new model will ensure that Dasher's earnings will increase by the exact amount a customer tips on every order. We'll have specific details in the coming days. The next month, DoorDash makes another big move, a harbinger of even more expansion. Shu knows that with its focus on the suburbs, DoorDash's app lists mostly chain restaurants. And while they may not be hip, they have a competitive advantage. But Shu wants it all. He wants cachet and to go head-to-head in urban settings with Postmates. So in August 2019, DoorDash acquires Caviar, a small upscale delivery service that's focused on partnerships with high-end restaurants in cities. A perfect complement to DoorDash's offerings. With market dominance in reach, DoorDash's investors push for it to consider a merger with Uber Eats. Advisors think the company has grown as much as it can on its own, and now there are only two paths left: buy another company equal in size, or go public. But the hypothetical merger with Uber Eats never gets very far. That's because Uber Eats has its eyes on a far meatier prize. Summer 2019, Paris, France. A chef is preparing an order of steak frites. She carefully maneuvers the fries out of the piping hot vegetable oil, then sprinkles a truffle seasoning blend over them. The steak is perfectly cooked to medium, just as the customer ordered. She reaches to plate the dish. But instead of fine china, this meal is going straight into a cardboard delivery box and then into an Uber Eats cooler bag. That's because this is an Uber Eats ghost kitchen. The kitchen itself is very real. It looks like your standard commercial-grade affair. But the restaurant itself is a phantom. There's no storefront, no tables. It doesn't exist. Uber Eats head Jason Droege proposed ghost kitchens as a way to increase delivery output. If chefs are focused solely on delivery, they'll be able to get orders out faster. Plus, they'll only make food that travels well. For the last few months, Uber Eats has been renting out ghost kitchens in Paris with a plan to launch a similar program in the U.S. And Postmates and DoorDash are paying attention. They're beginning their own experiments with ghost kitchens. If they own the commercial kitchens, they can pull in rental income as well as whatever cut they extract from the orders. It's another way to monetize, something these companies desperately need. None of them, except Grubhub, are profitable yet, and investors are getting agitated. Part of the problem is that because there's so much competition between the apps, they have to spend big on marketing to acquire customers. Then they charge customers low delivery fees to lure them in, but they still have to pay drivers. So some companies are eating the cost of deliveries to gain users, because right now, the race is on to grow big or face the chopping block. But while Grubhub may be the reigning champion of the delivery world, it's not immune to public backlash. On June 30th, 2019, a damning investigation by the New York Post hits newsstands, claiming the company engages in cyber squatting. Reporters say Grubhub is creating fake restaurant websites that are nearly identical to the real ones, but charging more money for the food. The Post finds more than 30,000 fake sites registered to Grubhub. Along with the fake sites, the company is also listing fake numbers that forward to the actual restaurant. With each phone call that goes through a fake number, Grubhub gets a commission. When the news breaks, restaurant owners are furious. The company claims it created the alternate sites to help small businesses, but the damage is done. The investigation only adds fuel to a growing chorus of criticism of big delivery and its shadowy practices. January 2020, Chicago. Grubhub CEO Matt Maloney walks into a conference room inside the historic Burnham Building. Outside, winter winds whip the gray high-rise. Inside, Maloney's board is gathered to make a battle plan. Maloney clears his throat.
Thanks for meeting here today. I wanted to talk to all of you because Mike and I have been thinking a lot about Grubhub's future. He looks at his co-founder, Mike Evans, and continues. As you know, last quarter's performance was disappointing. The board reviews the numbers in front of them. We had to cut our revenue and profit forecasts because of slowing customer growth. Our stock is down. We've got a market cap of $5 billion, down from $13 billion this time last year. The executives wince at the awful stats. Maloney looks around the room. We're getting clobbered by DoorDash, Postmates, and Uber Eats. Our once loyal customers are getting sucked in by special offers from our competitors. Plus, the whole cyber-squatting thing really hurt our image. We need to do something. He glances at Evans, who takes over.
So that's why we've hired a team of financial advisors to review our options. It may be time for a merger or to sell to someone else.
Some of the board members nod their heads. One of them tilts his chin up.
Do you have anyone in mind?
Evans smiles coyly.
Well, we're going to see who comes to us.
March 20th, 2020, New York City. The restaurants are empty. Very few pedestrians are on the sidewalk, and the subway is deserted. It's the first night of the city's stay-at-home order, and the streets are quiet. Except, that is, for the buzz of the electric bikes ridden by food delivery cyclists. One cyclist pulls over to make his stop. He's already got another order lined up. He makes the delivery, then heads to the restaurant to pick up the next order. And the next. And the next. And the next. All across the city, people are ordering in. The apps are flooded. The courier is worried about interacting with customers, but this is his livelihood. He has no choice. And the restaurants he's picking up from need delivery orders to survive. Even if the fees DoorDash, Postmates, Uber Eats, and Grubhub charge are sky high. Before the pandemic, investors were getting impatient for the big returns and explosive growth they were promised. Now, the food delivery companies see their orders explode. In March of 2020, business goes up more than 50% for DoorDash, Uber Eats, Grubhub, and Postmates. Meanwhile, Uber's new CEO, Dara Khosrowshahi, is making some changes to Uber Eats. He's determined to focus on places where Uber Eats is successful, prioritizing revenue over a wider footprint. He wants to exit any market where Uber Eats isn't the biggest or second biggest service. But he also has his eyes on the competition. DoorDash has beat out Grubhub and owns more than 40% of the food delivery market, the biggest share of all the apps. But Khosrowshahi thinks Uber Eats can beat DoorDash if they team up with Grubhub. In the past year, Grubhub spent millions to fend off competition, but its strategy failed and its stock tumbled. Khosrowshahi thinks he can buy it for cheap. So Grubhub and Uber start talking. At first, they're just friendly discussions. It's May 2020. Grubhub's Mike Evans gets a phone call.
Hello? Hi, Matt. It's Dara.
Dara Khosrowshahi, Uber's CEO. Evans smiles. He and Khosrowshahi have been talking regularly, often with Jason Droege, the head of Uber Eats. He knows Khosrowshahi has big plans for Uber Eats, and Evans is hoping Grubhub might be part of those plans.
Listen, I've been talking to our people, and we'd like to make you an offer, an all-stock takeover bid. Together, Uber and Grubhub would account for nearly 50% of the market. That's huge. We'd swallow DoorDash whole.
Evans inhales quickly.
What if we did 2 Uber shares for each Grubhub share?
Khosrowshahi pauses. He quickly does the math in his head. That would value Grubhub's stock at more than $60 a share, more than its current stock price. It would push Grubhub's total price tag to $6.1
billion. That's a pretty high premium.
It's a starting position.
Khosrowshahi laughs.
All right. Keep talking.
Grubhub and Uber keep working on a deal, but nothing ever materializes. Perhaps because of that steep price tag. But in June 2020, Grubhub does find a buyer. A European company called
Just Eat, wants a share of the U.S. market and sees a massive acquisition as a shortcut to expansion. The final price is $7.3 billion, more than what Uber was offering. But Uber's still set on expanding. In July 2020, it acquires Postmates for close to $2.7 billion. The deal gives Uber a bigger footprint, not as big as it would have had with a Grubhub deal, but at a much cheaper price. And with Postmates under its wing, Uber Eats now has a 37% share of food delivery sales. That puts it second behind DoorDash, which now has 45% of the market. And then, the food delivery companies get a major win. A yes vote on Prop 22, which means drivers in California will remain classified as contractors rather than employees. And contractors are much less expensive, with no health care or other worker benefits. But as vaccine injections start rolling out, the delivery company's pandemic boost will soon be shot down. You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's Zoho.one. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps. You're licensing peace of mind. December 9th, 2020. New York Stock Exchange President Stacey Cunningham walks up to the podium. She's dressed in a cream blazer. She looks out at the trading room floor. Normally, it would be packed, but today, it's completely empty. Behind her, a video call pops up on an LED screen and 16 faces appear in small boxes. In the middle is DoorDash CEO Tony Hsu. He waves at Cunningham. Hsu's having to access this big moment virtually, but the distance hardly dampens his excitement. Cunningham puts her finger on the buzzer and presses. She turns around. Everyone on the video call applauds. Hsu's company, DoorDash, is officially public. It starts trading at $102. It closes the day up 86% from its starting price, exceeding expectations. DoorDash is one of the few big success stories of 2020. Like the other delivery companies, it has thrived during the pandemic, and investors want in. But lots of analysts are also confused by the positive market response, because DoorDash is still not reliably profitable. It's only recorded a profit once in the second quarter of 2020 due to the surge in delivery caused by stay-at-home orders.
And then, on December 11th, the FDA gives emergency approval of Pfizer's COVID vaccine, giving analysts further cause for concern. As people get vaccinated and the country starts to reopen, demand for delivery could plummet. And DoorDash isn't the only company facing a possible rapid decline. January 2021. Uber CEO Dara Khosrowshahi is in his home office in San Francisco. He logs onto a Zoom call with the head of Postmates, Uber's most recent acquisition. Thank you all for joining me. I wanted to talk about the future of Postmates. Integrating it with Uber Eats requires some changes, as you can imagine. Plus, we're in an increasingly difficult climate. Now, as you know, we've seen a slight downturn in the number of orders as certain cities open up after the pandemic. The executives nod. Postmates CEO Bastian Lehmann looks concerned, but stays quiet. So we've decided we'll be restructuring Postmates to create better synergy with Uber Eats. Lehmann's face falls. He knows what this means. As part of the restructuring, we will be cutting 185 roles, including most of the executive team. Lehmann had been expecting this. He's got a multi-million-dollar exit package coming his way. But he's worried about his former Postmates employees, who are now out of a job in a country still ravaged by a pandemic. Unfortunately, for all the delivery apps, the pandemic bump is already fading. In February, DoorDash posts a loss of $312 million for 2020, more than double what it lost in 2019. Grubhub, meanwhile, loses $156 million. But Uber Eats is exploding. By May 2021, Uber Eats accounts for nearly two-thirds of the total bookings on Uber, a stunning benchmark in just 6 years. Uber Eats is trying to get ahead of its competitors by pivoting to alcohol delivery. It acquires Drizly, the biggest alcohol delivery service in the country, for $1.1 billion. Uber is betting that people will have become dependent on delivery, and the new habit will have staying power. That's why they've even ventured into grocery delivery, buying a Chilean grocery delivery startup in 2019 and expanding service across the U.S., Latin America, and Canada. The other food delivery companies know they have to cut costs to stay in the game. So they're turning to technology for solutions, whether through self-driving cars or drone delivery, or by building restaurants without human staff. DoorDash buys Chowbotics, a robotics company that assembles meals. Chowbotics machines make salads and poke bowls, among other things. DoorDash says it's going to put Chowbotics machines into restaurants to expand their offerings. For example, a pizza restaurant could offer salads made by Chowbotics. But there are still major questions about the viability of these companies and whether they have a functional business model. They have too many costs and not enough ways to make money. They could make more if they charged customers more, but customers have been trained to expect low fees. Fees that don't include a livable wage for the driver. It's a race to the bottom. The competitors offer the same service and without major distinguishing factors. It's difficult for any of them to break ahead. So DoorDash, Postmates, Grubhub, and Uber Eats are stuck trying to buy customer loyalty by slashing prices and constantly offering new deals. What's more, delivery is nice, but not essential. People can dine out or make food at home, and that fundamentally limits the number of customers these companies can compete for. And now, there's even more competition. This time, it's coming from services that are considered kinder to restaurants, like Tock and ChowNow. ChowNow charges restaurants a monthly fee without a commission on every order. Instead of forcing restaurants to use their drivers and couriers, ChowNow helps restaurants set up their own delivery apps and add ordering to their websites. It's more of a direct service for the restaurant than a separate business attempting to profit from it. Tock, meanwhile, focuses on higher-end restaurants and helps them use their existing staff to perform deliveries.
More and more, restaurants want to cut out the middleman. Restaurants that survived the pandemic are now focusing on forging closer relationships with their customers, encouraging them to call directly to order pickup. This is a business war with lots of losers. The drivers stuck delivering meals for a couple of bucks. The restaurants operating on slim margins, handing over percentages of every sale to food delivery companies. The food delivery companies themselves competing desperately with each other and struggling to reach profitability. Perhaps the only real winner is the customer, who can order anything, anytime, anywhere, and pay very little to do so.
Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
From Wondery, this is the fourth and final episode of Food Delivery Wars for Business Wars. A quick note about recreations you've been hearing. In most cases, we can't know exactly what was said at the time. Those scenes are dramatizations, but they're based on historical research. I'm your host, David Brown. Natalie Robomed wrote this story. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Edited and produced by Emily Frost. Voice acting by Michelle Phillippe. Sound design by Kyle Randall. Our associate producer is Kate Young. Our producer is Dave Schilling. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer-Beckman and Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.